Have you ever heard of people saving up for that big vacation? Well, one of the things that we tend to see anymore is people saving up to make the pilgrimage to Coachella.
Coachella! Oh my gosh. It's on. Coachella is happening.
That's Chris Mueller. I am Timory Millington, and you are listening to Trending wherever you are in your car, maybe sitting next to your phone, maybe on your lunch break. Hello. I hope you guys are doing well. Be sure to share this episode so other people can listen up as they're sadly not at Coachella too.
Yeah. So Coachella, if you don't know what Coachella is, it is a massive gathering of concert goers in one of the least desirable places on earth, like the Southern California desert, essentially. But at this point of the year, it is actually kind of a beautiful time to be there. And it is a massive festival of musicians and, you know, electronic music artists. And it kicks off the festival season, I think.
Art and music, I think, are huge passions that people have. However, what's interesting is that in many ways, it's become kind of an excuse to party. I was telling Chris before the show, I have had friends who have saved up for 2 years to go to Coachella. They save up, they end up investing in their wardrobe, making this big deal about how they need to have a nice wardrobe. And then I look at what they're wearing and I'm like, you could have either gotten that at a garage sale or cut up an old shirt from high school.
Yeah, my wife and I were out on Friday night and we kind of live en route to Coachella. So if you're coming from Southern California to get to Coachella, you would come through our town. And so we're in the restaurant. It was a little more crowded than it normally would be on a Friday night. And I said, I think this might be Coachella, honey. And she's like, how do you know? I'm like, well, it looked like a bunch of kind of, you know, hip, dirty looking people were in front of the restaurant, and a lot of people smoking outside. So
you added hip this time when you said
it
earlier. You said dirty looking people.
There is there is a certain art to looking homeless and hip at the same time. Coachella. Anyway.
I mean, tried to pull it off too. Justin Bieber had this ridiculous outfit with some dumb dance moves from what I understand.
Yeah, you know, so there is an art to looking, you know, hip and homeless. And I think Bieber tried and it didn't work. But I got to give him credit. I mean, he Bieber's out there and he's doing his Justin Bieber thing, but impromptu gets up on stage and leads a worship set.
Which is pretty cool. I know that he has struggled. I remember one interview he did, like, I'm looking for God. He was identifying with being an atheist. I hate those words, identifying with. Oh. But, I mean, he's been on a journey, and it's great to hear that he is praising our Lord again, because he came from some pretty awesome Christian roots, you know, grew up adopted as well.
Yeah, absolutely. A mother who chose life for him.
Wait, he wasn't adopted.
Single mother.
There we go. Yeah. Pro-life, which is great.
Absolutely. But yeah, and again, you're at Coachella and maybe you've gone there for like debauchery, or maybe you grew up with Christian roots, or you've heard the gospel and you're not quite embracing it. And there you are in the midst of all of that. Justin Bieber gets up on stage and leads worship. That I just think there's got to be someone who's out there who's like, God is speaking to me in this moment. And I think God probably was speaking to someone in that moment. So,
and praising our Lord in the midst of, you know, the insanity of Beyonce, which people just, man, Beyonce worshipers. I swear people think Beyonce is life. I mean, Destiny's Child, they are comparing him, I think you said, to the Holy Trinity.
Yeah, I saw an article that said, we expect the Holy Trinity to assemble Destiny's Child, you know. So Beyonce, by all accounts, had an amazing set. I mean, people said it was the best concert they've ever been to, and it was part of that overall concert. She had like over 100 people on stage, a marching band, all those things. So as far as the spectacle of modern concert, great. I'm getting tired of girls who grew up in singing in church now going on to have, you know, these rather explicit lyrics in their music. You know, like why have we lost these young women who grew up singing in church? Well, they ain't singing in church anymore. Yeah.
I had forgotten that her story was from a Christian background because she was in a movie I remember years ago where she did play like a small town Christian girl, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it was. It's been a long time.
No,
well, here's what I just look at. It breaks my heart to see that I think the allurement of pleasure, of fame, of money, how it can draw us away from what is such a fundamental part of life. And that is our roots. Where are we from and where are we going? And I think that this is something people like Beyonce, Katy Perry, and many others end up losing when they see things that sparkle and move and draw them into what seems like a more successful life. But in reality, what is success to us?
Yeah, it's where are you seeking your affirmation? Where are you seeking approval? And a lot of times we go out seeking that in the world. We seek it in other people. We seek it in fame. We seek it in, you know, success, quote unquote. You know, but that if you lost that sense of identity, that my identity, what matters is that I am a child of the living God, that I have an inheritance with Christ, that God chose me. Gosh, it is so easy to get far afield.
Right.
And, you know, and again, if you're singing in church and that's where you feel like you're receiving that affirmation is from the singing in church, not from the love of God in church, then yeah, it's very easy just to chase after that and end up so far on the other side that you don't even know where you started anymore sometimes.
Right. Well, here's one of the biggest music and art festivals of the year. And I have to ask you guys, you know, listening here, what is music to you and what is the purpose of music in your life? You know, you look at Coachella, people traveling far and wide in order to attend this event. You know, we know that people tend to see music as something that inspires them, that moves them. But to what purpose?
Yeah, you know, it's my musical tastes are so eclectic, but it's true. I drove in listening to Mozart. But in the afternoon I'll be listening probably to Imagine Dragons Thunder with my kids because it seems like they play that every single afternoon. But yeah, I think music is that thing. We identify ourselves and our particular culture with the music we listen to. And that's not your you know, ethnic culture. It's the subculture you belong to in pop culture, right? So often. But yeah, what's the end? What's being given glory? I was looking at Spotify's top songs of 2017 as we turned into the new year. And gosh, how many of those were explicit?
Right.
You know, just so many of them were explicit. And the ones that weren't explicit weren't exactly, you know, something I'd want to listen to with my kids either.
Absolutely. Well, and we look at music. I can't help but, you know, I was talking to a friend about this yesterday. What is the purpose of music in our culture? Well, ultimately, all of culture is meant to lead in one way or another to worship. And now that doesn't mean that every song you listen to has to be explicitly a worship song, but that means that what we listen to should ultimately be a conversation of human nature, of beauty, of struggle, of pain, of triumph. And these things in and of themselves are praising God in the nature and creation that he has put together that lead us ultimately to something that is beautiful.
Should be praising God. But I think so often what we find in our pop culture music is it's praising humanity. You know, and it's the garden all over again, right? Mm. You can choose to be God, essentially. I was at Disneyland with my kids years ago, and we were walking around and we were by that kind of main stage in Tomorrowland, if you've ever been to the park. And the cover band was playing Moves Like Jagger, right?
Mm.
And everyone I could see was singing along with it, you know, whether they're walking to the next ride or a dad with a kid on his shoulders, I remember particularly. And it struck me like, this is worship.
Mm-hmm.
This is worship. Mm-hmm. It's just not worship of God.
Right.
You know, our culture worships the creature, not the creator. And that's when it can get really scary.
Well, and when you look at the word culture, and ultimately it has to do with cult, and a cult is something that worships, right? And so everything in our culture, what we're consuming, whether it's music, movies, they should be stories and music that are good, true, and beautiful. And that means even the painful stories, those are something that are beautiful because it follows human progression, human growth. It follows, you know, triumphing, good over evil, all of these elements. And I look at Coachella sometimes and we use it as an excuse to party and not necessarily to be consumed by music that draws us past the music.
Yeah, I almost feel like in the Coachella experience, as it's kind of promoted, that the music is almost secondary to the festival, the festival gear to be seen and to see and to possibly meet and all of that. And the music is just kind of, you know, incidental to the gathering of people.
Right. And I look too at, you know, Coachella, the clothing, man, I mean, even it reminds me of like a rave, but it's okay to do it because it's outdoors and in the sunshine rather than at a rave where I'm wearing duct tape and that's about it. Right. Like it's basically the same thing, but it's allowed in the light because it's got the name of being in the midst of music and art.
Right. And it feels cleaner because it is outside in the sun. You know, you mentioned music and I think sometimes we think of good, wholesome music and we think every song has to be that stereotypical Christian music song that it's always the same song over again. And you can have great music that doesn't even say the name of Jesus, but can glorify him in the telling of the story, right? In the story. I think Switchfoot, one of my favorite bands, Christian band, But so much of their music, the Christianity is implicit in the music, but it's not necessarily explicit in the music, right?
Absolutely.
But you definitely get it. It comes across.
Well, we need all forms of story, of praise, of truth. I think that that is something that is so important, as we see that music really does inspire, draw together, and unite people. It's uniting a number of people right now in the Coachella Valley. Well, when I look at it too, you know, another show that is based off of music, you know, you have American Idol, The Voice, and others that have some of the highest ratings. And part of that is because they're a little more family friendly than other shows, but also there's something that about music that draws us in. And there is an American Idol contestant recently who's had quite an interesting back and forth with Katy Perry. Her name is Shannon O'Hara, and she grew up singing in church. She made it to the top 24 on American Idol.
Yeah, it's interesting. Katy immediately goes, hey, so you grew up in singing in church, right? Which is, that's Katy Perry's story.
Right.
I mean, she grew up singing in church, and so they had that connection there. And Katy Perry actually says, I know exactly how it feels to be raised in church. And I wonder, like, what is that? What's right. going on with Katy Perry in that? Because she's obviously walked away from faith. To what we can see and to what she said publicly.
Well, right? And her parents are even pastors. That's what's so interesting. You have this girl, and sometimes it used to be we'd see Katy Perry kind of defending Christians. You don't see that as often anymore, but she grew up with a really solid foundation from what it sounds like, and it just breaks my heart because now she's mentoring young women, and at the same time, this conversation between Katy Perry is really interesting. You know, Katy Perry and Shannon O'Hara sang Katy Perry's song Unconditionally. But to Shannon, it was a song of praise to God and talking about the unconditional love that she experiences. And she wanted to relay music to her faith. And that's what she did in this audition.
Yeah, I mean, pretty awesome, actually, to take what Katy probably wrote as a secular song and then to sing it as worship. You know, and again, this is Christianity so often, right? We look at the history of the church, we go out into the culture, we take what is good, and we bring it to the glory of God, you know, and we've done that for centuries and centuries. So I love that this young woman does this on American Idol.
You're listening to Trending. That is Chris Mueller. I am Timray Millington. You can also check out the show on Facebook Live at Timray or on our YouTube channel, Chris and Timray. Trending with Chris and Timray. We will be right back. You're listening to Trending. This is Timray Millington, and that is Chris Mueller. Coming up later on the show, we're going to be talking about something you might hear your friends discussing, and that is whether or not nurse practitioners, and physician assistants can perform abortions because of, quote unquote, how safe abortion is. Tune in more later for that on the show. In the meantime, Women's March has kind of just put their foot in their mouth this past week. We have been talking over the last couple weeks about Reddit, Craigslist, and also Backpage and
right.
how they have kind of been shutting down some of their sexually explicit and exploitation essentially of young children because those ads are no longer allowed to be available online because of a new piece of legislation that was passed and signed into law.
Yeah, they've been shutting down. The government has been shutting down for Backpage at least. But yeah, so Donald Trump, our president, signed a landmark piece of legislation. It's the, and this allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking. Or it's the FOSTA. What is
that? It's called FOSTA, Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. And what it has done, it is actually making online providers, basically websites, responsible for what their viewers or what their customers actually post for ads, which is why Reddit and Craigslist have had to remove some of their online advertisements, for example, like the personals on Craigslist.
Right.
And now this is also what, in part, FOSTA has allowed for the taking down of Backpage as well, because what we were seeing was the trafficking of young children. Secret words were even being used, like quote-unquote schoolgirl and Lolita, to make it clear that this is a facilitation of a sexual relationship, a purchasing of goods, but those two key words would make it clear that you would know it was a child.
Right. And just to be clear, and so prior to this, you know, Backpage or Craigslist or Reddit or any of these kind of message board sites, anyone could post anything. And what they would say is, well, this isn't us, it's our users. We don't know what's going on. We're not going to censor what's happening on our sites. We are not going to be responsible. And the government has said, no, you're facilitating that transaction for a person, right? Whether that, you know, the human trafficking of young people or, you know, prostitution happening on our website, you're taking a hand in that. you know? And so, you know, yeah, huge, huge victory for human rights. I mean, that's the only way you can see it, for human rights, for women's rights, for children's rights. This has to happen. And so it's crazy that the Women's March would come out and say that this is a negative thing for women's rights. I don't get where they're coming from on that at all.
I get across the board, some people do not like FOSTA because it is monitoring the internet. But here's the deal. We have to have some level of responsibility for companies that are allowing for the sexual trafficking of children. Bottom line, and this is what it's about. It's not just about protecting adults who are choosing to engage in prostitution, and it's safer to be involved in sex work if you have the facilitation online. We're really focusing on children in this. And what has happened is the Women's March has sent out a number of tweets just talking about how this won't be safe or good for women. One of them says, "The shutting down of Backpage is an absolute crisis for sex workers who rely on the site to safely get in touch with clients. Sex workers' rights are women's rights."
So I take exception to that a couple of ways. How? I mean, okay, so the internet, it's a cliche, right? That people lie about their identity, they post fake pictures, they do all, you know. So how is it that getting a text or an email from someone would make it that safer? Because you're not, I think it would actually, I would argue, it might make it less safe because you're not seeing the person you're engaging with. You don't know what you're getting yourself into. So you might be setting up this rendezvous for an illegal activity. Can we not forget that? And then you find out, no, this wasn't an individual. This was a setup. And now you no longer are a free person. You're a sex slave, right? How can you protect against that through the internet if you're going to meet an individual someplace you've never met before?
Well, and you look at what the Women's March is saying. At no point do they talk about the victims of sexual abuse and the sex industry here. They never mention this is harmful for children. Maybe if they disagree with the legislation, they could propose what they would negotiate and lobby for being better. But they didn't do that. They just said, no, this isn't good for sex workers. Well, this is a similar argument that we have to the abortion movement many years ago prior to Roe versus Wade. Well, women are going to have abortions anyways. We might as well legalize it. So basically, the Women's March is saying, well, there are going to be sex workers anyways. And I hear a lot of people in the Women's March atmosphere say things like, well, this is the oldest of professions for women. Should that mean that we continue to encourage it and desire it? Because that doesn't sound very feminist to me.
Again, you know, we're in this modern feminism where it used to be feminists spoke out against things like pornography, right? Because you know, you took a person and you commoditized them. Now something's happened, and I can only think that, you know, or maybe I'll ask you, like, do you think that this is because we're trying to de-sanctify sex? We're trying to take the sacred out of sex and just make it another thing that people do. It's just a commodity. It's no big deal. And so it's not so much about women's rights as it is saying that sex isn't sacred, and so that takes away all of the guilt of having promiscuous lifestyles. And so prostitution should be fine because it's just a physical thing.
Yeah, we've cheapened sex is what you're saying. We've
Absolutely.
Cheapened it. I mean, to the point where if you're studying any type of marketing, and I did a lot of marketing and PR, the reality is quote unquote, sex sells. And we're not just talking what looks sexy, but what is sex? There's something shocking and interesting about it, right?
Right.
That draws us in, something beautiful about it, a mystery about it.
Right.
That pulls people in. And now we are hearing the defense through the Women's March. They're saying, no, we should be able to allow people to continue to have sexually explicit interactions facilitated through online websites. Forgetting about the victims is what we're seeing. Forgetting about the fact that we need to help women who are in the midst of the sexual slavery industry.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you've been a supporter of the Women's March in any way, I think we should have equality in the workplace. Women should be paid the same as men. All of those great things, you know, we should be paid based on talent and merit. Absolutely. But this ain't right. And so I think if you have a voice, you need to use it and reach out, whether that's on Twitter or that's on Facebook or whether it's email, and just reach out to Women's March and say, you've got your head so far wrong on this one. I could have gone different directions with that.
I wouldn't blame you.
But it's just so clearly backwards, you know, that I can't stand with you. I can't support you. And everything that you might be saying that could possibly be good is completely negated by this nonsense.
Praise God for the passing of FOSTA. I really appreciate, you know, this current administration has taken a stance specifically on sexual trafficking. And this is something that is being addressed. I mean, I personally live in San Diego. It's one of the top places for sex trafficking in the world. I have seen, even in my small town that I grew up in Lake Arrowhead, there were stings that took place where they went in and found that hotels were operating, essentially bringing young women in from Thailand. Mm. And these things are happening in our own communities. Even in the community where I worked in crisis pregnancy centers, we see the women who are in crisis pregnancy as a result of sexual trafficking.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a temptation, I think, in our modern culture to say that this is a partisan issue, that this is somehow Republican, it's anti-women or whatever, depending on what side of the aisle you stand on. We can't forget that Kamala Harris, who was, you know, the attorney for California, I'm blanking on the term. Yep. Anyway, she sued Backpage herself in California and wanted the site closed down completely because of this issue. And this is, she's about as far on the left of the spectrum as you can get. This isn't right. This isn't left. This is just what needs to happen.
Yeah. It is protecting the innocent. A real success for women is putting an end to sex trafficking and the industry's manipulation and abuse. So thank God that this has taken place. Like Chris said, if there's anything you can do, maybe you know about websites, report them. Websites that are facilitating even small level facilitation of local relationships. I think that this is where the legislation is going to have a harder time cracking down. And that is in small communities with local websites that aren't being monitored as much.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's those, and that's the thing about the internet. It's, you know, it's the Hydra. You cut off one head and two more grow, you know?
Has someone been watching Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Man, I love comic books. Comic book movies. I love comic book movies. Yeah. But anyway.
I've actually quit watching Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after this last season. I was just getting so tired of, you know, I talked a lot last year on the show about how the last season of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really dealt a lot with AI in many ways.
Okay.
And, you know, this reality where they're hooked up to a machine, but their brain and body continues to go on,
like,
right?
Like a Matrix kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. This one, I was just done.
Yeah. I live on the Netflix spectrum. So I'm like seasons behind. So I think the season we just finished was when the guy was like an alien took over his body and he was kind of like the devil mutant thing.
Yes.
I don't know. It was weird. And it's one of those, I can't watch it with my kids. So it has really very little value to me. As a, you know, like Marvel films for me are something I can do with my family. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. crossed a lot of lines that I can't watch it with my family.
Right. So, I could see where that is coming from. Absolutely. Favorite show then, or movie of Marvel?
Oh, you know what? Okay. Oh, wow. That's tough. I just had this discussion with a friend. I just watched Ragnarok. Thought it was fantastic. Really enjoyed that. Best of the Thor series. But I would have to say overall, probably Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Ooh, Captain America was definitely good. You know what I saw this weekend? Finally?
Yes.
Finally saw Black Panther.
Oh, see, okay.
I know if you're listening, like, what, 2 months later almost? Excellent movie. I definitely see a lot of, like, the political elements that people complain about. Fine. It was a good, entertaining movie, had a good story. And, you know, I would recommend it. It was a good movie.
Yeah. Well, the plan is I'm going to go see it with my kids someday.
Someday.
Before Infinity War comes out.
Isn't that just in like a week?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, okay, you better get into the movie theater this week here. That's the great part, because then those $5 movies,
That's what I'm waiting for. That's exactly, that is the big family theater right there.
Absolutely. I remember our family, you know, four kids. Sometimes you'd have to wait to see a movie till a couple months later.
Absolutely.
It's just what happens. Well, if you're listening, this is Timory Millington. That is Chris Mueller. If you want to get in contact with Chris Mueller, maybe bring him out to speak at a local event you have coming up, or maybe a conference. You can find him at
it's chrismueller.co. That's chrismueller.co. You can always find me on Twitter too. It's @cmuellertweets.
And some fun projects coming up. Where are you going in the next couple weeks?
Gosh, you know what? I am just kind of in a little bit of a slow period, which I'm thanking the Lord for. I'm working on a lot of writing. But then once the summer hits, it's conferences. Yeah. So I'll be in St. Louis. I'll be in Ohio. I'm going to Ohio like six times for Catholic Family Land. And
love Ohio.
And yeah. Good times. Lots of travel this summer.
Well, you are listening to Trending. That is Chris Mueller. If you would like to listen more to these shows, your network probably only carries one of our shows each week, and we produce multiple throughout the week. So you can find us online. You can check out iTunes podcast store as well. We'll be right back talking about abortion. Welcome back. This is Trending. I am Timory Millington. That is Chris Mueller. A little later on in the show, we are going to be talking about abortion and just some of the testimonies of nurses who have been working in hospitals when they were not allowed to basically give medical treatment to a child that was born alive in the midst of an abortion and then was basically left to die. I will talk a little bit more about that. Stories from the UK. You don't want to miss these stories because I think it's really important, especially for anyone who's working in the medical industry. In the meantime, one of the things you might be hearing is that abortion is such a safe procedure that nurses, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants can now perform them. This is problematic.
Yeah. Okay. A nurse can't do a tooth extraction without a dentist in the room.
Right.
Right. But you can carve a baby from the inside. So you can carve a living human being from the inside of its mother, and that's all good.
Right. There was a piece that was published in National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, published a piece claiming essentially that abortion is safe and risk-free. The complications are rare. What's interesting is they mentioned some of them, and we can walk through this just in a second, but it also blames laws for creating barriers to safe and effective abortions today. Let's just take that last point, Chris. They're saying that laws are banning safe and effective abortions from taking place. Do you remember what happened in Texas just a couple years ago?
No.
Well, in Texas, what happened was a number of laws that were passed, yes, some of them by pro-lifers trying to put a crackdown on the abortion industry. But in fact, what these laws did was they actually met things like, well, we recognize that the abortion clinics are not meeting basic ambulatory privileges. So they don't have access to a hospital within something like a 20 to 30 mile radius where if something goes wrong,
right,
which does happen often.
Okay, which could just happen because of anesthesia.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So just if you mishandle anesthesia, it can go south real fast.
Absolutely.
So you need access to hospitals. Yes. Okay.
Not to mention that you have sharp tools inside a woman's uterus that can very easily be perforated.
Sure.
I mean, just a 40 Days for Life campaign that I ran off of Miramar Road in San Diego, we had multiple issues and multiple botched abortions. And one of them where they perforated through her uterus and one of the tools came back through her back. Like this just happened in my community and it's horrific. But you guys, when they claim, hey, we are actually being prevented from having safe abortions because of laws. Well, actually what happened, that law that just was meeting basic ambulatory privileges so that they had a direct communication with the hospital within 30 miles, right? 20 to 30 miles. They didn't meet that and the abortion clinic was going to shut down. Not only that, they didn't even have the ability to fit gurneys through some of the small abortion clinics, not even hospitals,
right,
to get a patient out. So who knows what the damage is to that woman, whether or not she can be bumpily moved on something that's not a gurney. Well, what happened is Planned Parenthood and a huge number of people in the pro-abortion industry ended up fighting to keep the abortion clinics open without meeting these basic health and medical standards.
Okay, safe abortion isn't. Right. Because even in a quote unquote safe abortion, you're killing someone. That's our baseline here. But then the idea that you're just not going to put in the rational safeguards that you would have in any sort of medical clinic, whether you're going in for a nose job or for any type of medical procedure, that no, those aren't necessary because the ultimate goal here is to kill an infant in the womb. That's like we're going to throw all caution to the wind. I just, you know, as much as Planned Parenthood says they're for women's rights, I just don't see that this is a great valuing of women's lives, right? I don't see how saying we're going to put you in jeopardy and have no safeguards in these procedures, which we know can go south and have gone south horribly in the past. We're going to say, nope, all those safeguards that we'd normally have in place are out because this is about women's rights. So women's right to what? To have horrible complications and no medical intervention? Like, that's insane.
Well, and if you think about it, here they are championing women's rights. But Chris, have we even talked about the baby yet? You and I, for the last 5 minutes, have been only talking about abortion from the perspective and medical safety of the woman. And that was also in Texas. They were trying to make basic health standards important within the clinic. Those weren't met. well, here we are. We're seeing this journals claiming that nurses and nurse practitioners and so forth should be able to perform abortions. Well, what about infertility? Not every woman that has an abortion experiences infertility. But if you lower the standard of care, the increase in scar tissue, the increased risk in perforating uterus, increased risk in a woman's lady parts could prevent her from being able to have a child down the road.
Well, yeah. And then you have the increased risk of preterm delivery. Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, I had a sister-in-law who worked in an area where they had a high abortion rate, and she would see it on a regular basis, women coming in because their bodies just couldn't hold children anymore because mm-hmm. they'd had a number of abortions. And so they just couldn't hold the child inside anymore.
Yeah.
And we don't tell abortion clinics, they're not really big on the counseling of here's the long-term effects of mm-hmm. this thing. They say, oh, it's all going to be good. It's not a big deal. We're going to move on. It's just a Band-Aid. We're going to have a nurse practitioner do it. And that's just not true. It's not fair. And again, how can you argue women's rights when you're just putting women in these positions?
I want to emphasize what you just said, Chris, because it was a really important point. Women who have had multiple abortions or sometimes even one end up having premature births. And
yeah.
those children don't always last because, like you said, the body's gotten into a routine where it is not used to having a full-term pregnancy.
Yeah, you've weakened the cervix.
Right. Well, then you add the fact that the ABC link, right? The abortion breast cancer link. Oh my gosh, do I have a story here? I was in community college in a speech class. Remember, my mom did say, you know, Timory, just try not to get yourself in trouble in class. You know, get through some of your classes. It's not your time necessarily to evangelize here. And you know what happened was I agreed with her. I saw what she was saying, but at the same time, what happened was the teacher said, okay, we're going to have a persuasive speech, but there are two things you can't talk about: abortion, because that's already settled, and gay marriage, because that's already settled.
Is that just like something that people on that side do? They always say like, well, this is just settled. It's just settled. You know, since when is it settled? Like, anyway,
it's
sorry,
not
continue.
Settled. No, but
no,
I agree.
It's
with
not
you.
Settled.
Well, and at the time, I think it was maybe like 2009-ish. So, I mean, we had not even hit Obergefell versus Hodges. Grant, there had been suddenly, you know, this push to legalize marriages in California. But the year prior, the state of California had just voted and it was a no-go, right?
Right, yeah.
And so what was crazy to me is I thought, oh, now she's got me just like upset and frustrated. I'm going to find a way to talk about abortion, but I'm going to do it in a creative and diplomatic way. So I decided to do my speech on the abortion breast cancer link, because there's so much science behind it and you can't deny the topic. Your breast, if you're pregnant, develops into type 2, 3, and 4 lobules, which means the more developed the breast tissue is, the more resistant it is to cancer, essentially. So you might notice women tend to have larger breasts when they're pregnant. It's because a high number of lobules are being developed in the breast, but they're commonly just type 1 lobules. And it's toward the end of pregnancy that they develop for the milk gland so that they can then produce milk, but also so that they're cancer resistant. So actually having children is good for women and their bodies to fight future breast cancer risk. Well, when you have an abortion early on, what happens is the development of those lobules into type 3 and 4 lobules that are cancer resistant never takes place. So you have all type 1 and 2 lobules that are extremely cancer vulnerable. So I did my speech on this. Oh boy, the lady sat there, arms crossed, front row. She knew that I listened to her rule, but wasn't so sure. You know how many people came up after, Chris, saying, I had no idea about that.
Right.
I hadn't thought about abortion as having any impact other than just the woman deciding not to have her baby.
Because that's the narrative.
Absolutely. It's risky.
No,
that's the bottom line.
It's risky. It's long. They have long-term effects. It's not just going in for a quote-unquote procedure.
Well, and what do you think, Chris, about this huge focus on mental illness in our culture? Yet one of the main things psychologists talk about in quietly, it's like the dirty little secret, is that they're having to counsel a lot having to do with abortion.
Again, it's not part of the narrative, so we don't talk about it. And I think this goes back to this Women's March talking about, you know, sex workers should have the freedom to advertise online. We're trying to say that these things aren't connected to the emotional health of a person, that the mother's connection to a child isn't real, that spiritual connection isn't real. It is. And you can deny it as much as you want, but it's real. And it's not real because we've stigmatized it. It's real because you have another person's beating heart living inside of you, being nourished by your body. Like, that's a real connection that we can't just explain away with words or science. There's a spiritual thing happening there. it's not because we've stigmatized it. It's because it's real. And so, you know, you have these people who want to say that you have the ultimate freedom to do anything you want, the only thing they can do is deny it and hide it, because the reality is it has an effect on women. It has, you know, when the child of your womb is torn out into pieces, that has an effect on you. Whether you want to own up to it or not, you're going to have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're touching on the heart of the topic here, Chris, that while we've spent this whole segment talking about the perspective of the mother, we also have to talk about the baby. And I think that we've seen a lot of progress in focusing on women more in this topic. But at the end of the day, you're talking about the destruction of a woman's soul in abortion, the killing of another human being, and the destruction of another human life in abortion, that being the baby.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sad today that we hold a child, a little baby, and every time I can't help but think, you might not have been here. I mean, especially looking into the faces of the babies that are born within the crisis pregnancy centers, you weren't going to be here.
Yeah. You know, it's more and more we learn that that child can feel pain, that child can dream, that child has brain waves happening. I mean, this is a real human being, you know, and it's a viable human being. This is someone who is destined to do things in life, to have an impact on this world, to be a revelation of God's glory, because every child, every person is made in the image and likeness of God, right? So this person was created by God as a unique revelation of himself. And that should be protected and revered and held up. And when women find themselves in crisis situations, they're pregnant in an unexpected way or outside of marriage, or they can't deal with it for whatever, as a culture, we should be just rallying around in support of these women and these children, because what we have there is a sacred person made in the image and likeness of God to reflect the glory of God. And we have to hold that sacred. That's who we are as Christians. We have to give glory to God.
And we have to be willing, you know, for anyone listening, maybe you yourself have had an abortion. I really want to encourage you, whether you have or you know someone who's struggling with that years later. Rachel's Hope and Healing, you can Google it, Rachel's Hope and Healing, Rachel's Vineyard, are two excellent resources for anyone who's been through an abortion and wants to start to begin that healing journey, because it does have an impact on you and your future. That is Chris Mueller. I am Tamarie Millington. You are listening to Trending. We'll be right back. Sometimes, Chris, I look at this issue of abortion, and I in particular tend to speak a lot on abortion. I go to high schools, colleges, I'll help in educating our seminarians. And one of the things I find, Chris, is that we are pro-life as a country. For the most part, there are a lot of people here. You look at the stats, the pro-life movement is growing. We're well at that, you know, 50% mark. It's there. Young people in particular are surging into the pro-life movement. You know, Catholics are pro-life, but I go and give a presentation to a conservative Catholic university. I go and give a presentation to pro-life seminarians, and across the board, it does not matter where I am, people say, I did not know that's what abortion actually was. I did not recognize that. Now, when I was a child, about 12, 13 years old, at one point, I remember kind of thinking, well, maybe I'm okay with abortion because a woman can just not have her child.
Right.
That was my childlike brain kind of thinking, well, you know, there are bad people, bad parents, abuse, homelessness. Maybe they could just not have their child. Well, what I ended up realizing is that abortion is something that happens to a child. It's not that a child just, you know, goes off into nowhere. It's the destroying, ripping, killing, ending of a human life. Those are words that are true. And so what I find is that suddenly people's pro-life stance is more solidified. They're more passionate to bring it up in the midst of a conversation where someone's saying, I'm thinking about an abortion, instead of saying, oh, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, whatever you think is best.
Right.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Tamarie Millington. We're talking about abortion. I think that more education on this issue would really change the landscape of how we are willing to bring up abortion.
Yeah, you know, it's the mystery of a child in the womb. I think we don't, you know, as a kid growing up, you get like what, a week of that in your health class or your science class, you know, in high school or whatever. As Catholic families, you know, one of the beautiful things about having a big family, and, you know, we're super blessed to have six children. My teens, they've watched the development of their siblings in the womb. I mean, they were there to put their hands on my wife's stomach when they felt the baby kick, you know. They've seen infants come home, and so an infant in the womb is not this sort of hypothetical thing, you know, it's an abstract idea of a human being. They look at our youngest and they go, that's a baby. That's a baby, and that's what happens there. And so they see the sonogram. And so we've lost that. We've lost this idea of a large Catholic family. And again, you don't have to have 6 kids. You don't have to have 12 kids. But we don't have, you know, you see it less and less. You lose that sense of mystery, that sense of the sacred, that sense of this is my little brother, my little sister. And so we, again, pregnancy, development, it becomes abstract. And so, yeah, education is the answer. You know, going through and showing. I remember when I was a kid in high school, I had the little pin, the feet pin that the pro-life community gives
out. Precious feet.
Oh, yeah. And it was such a powerful, and I wore it on my Letterman jacket. It was right on the V for Vista High School. And because this isn't a blob of cells. It's a human being with toes, right? And that changes it. That changes the thing. It's not abstract anymore. This is a person.
Well, and you talked about your children's pro-life formation. You know, that is exactly why people are more pro-life today. And that's because of the technology we have. We have a window to the womb. If we would just take those ultrasound images and paste them all over social media, if we would put them all over our refrigerators. But in a lot of the studies, we saw that people are more pro-life today because they grew up with a picture of their baby's sister, their friend's little child, right? They're on the refrigerator door that they saw and they looked at. And when you have those images, they make a difference, you know, because there's no window to the womb when you're looking at a mom's belly. For some reason, we justify things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, we know that when pro-life centers have sonogram machines, right, that people choose life because they see their child. So you go, well, gosh, wouldn't it be awesome if in our Catholic churches, we just had the, hey, want to see your baby? You know, come. One of the most beautiful things someone did for us was he came up after an event I was doing in our parish and he said, hey, I'm the head of obstetrics for this, you know, company in this region. If you ever want to see your baby, let me know. Come in and I'd love to, you know, he didn't know us, didn't know, you know, and he's become a really good friend, but it was like, I want to love your baby with you. I want to help you love your baby. You know, gosh, if you've got a pregnancy, you know, a crisis pregnancy center in your area that doesn't have this equipment, that's something to give money towards.
Absolutely.
That's something to support.
It's 7 out of 10 women who see the ultrasound of their baby actually end up choosing to keep the baby at that time. And it is just the numbers. If you can help that woman to see that picture, that's why the abortion clinics hate it when states technically require that they show the ultrasound image to the woman. There are a lot of states that actually require this, but you know, Planned Parenthood, who's in the medical room actually monitoring to make sure that image is shown. In fact, they keep the screen turned away from the woman intentionally. They keep the noise down so that the woman cannot hear her heartbeat. But we hear cases where women do in fact actually hear, oh my gosh, is that my baby's heartbeat? And there are moments of huge transformation that take place in the operating room, either prior to the abortion, or they realize that after, man, like, that was a real life there. In fact, there are a number of great stories, Chris, coming out from Ireland right now because, please, you guys, we have been talking about this for about 2 months now. Save the 8th in Ireland. Tweet out to them. Encourage them. Let them know that you're praying for them because they are fighting to keep Ireland a pro-life country. It is a huge battle. 7 people back in the 90s stood up and said, we are pro-life, and they mobilized people to the streets and they prevented this pro-abortion laws from being legalized. And now what we're seeing again is people are in the streets rallying. But there are some really interesting testimonies coming from nurses. One nurse, an Irish country girl, as she called herself, was working in a London hospital where abortion is legal. And she said that during the abortion, the child was born alive. And what happened is Rita then had that baby that was disposed in a bedpan. Technically, she couldn't do anything to resuscitate it, but she saw the baby's heart beating. She saw the size of the baby was as big as her palm. And she's just looking at this little child. Now, legally, you cannot do anything to intervene in an abortion procedure. But this is a story of countless nurses, whether in the ER or in abortion clinics or in just an abortion part of the hospital, where somehow they're around and they see a baby born alive and left to die.
It's in any other context, if you saw an infant alive and struggling, you would be required to do something. You know, but because we've decided in an abstract way that this human being isn't a human being, now it's you're not allowed to save their life. Just sit with that for a second, right? That infants who are being born alive are being left to just die from exposure. We're basically going back to ancient Rome, right? Pre-Christian Rome. This is where we're at now. That you would just leave children out to die of exposure.
It's just a bloody, bloody sacrifice. And this woman is not alone. There's another woman named Karen. She said she saw the baby left to die in a kidney dish in the hospital. The baby was longer than her fingertips. And she said she was looking as you could point out each of the child's toes. Mm. And you just hear these stories, Chris. I mean, I used to have nightmares at night when I was in high school thinking about these abortion clinics and the bloodiness of what was taking place.
Yeah, you know, I don't like to confront this. I don't like to see it. I don't like to talk about it. I want a very clean, sterile reality. But I don't have a choice as a believer in Jesus Christ to stand by and say that I'm just going to wash my hands. I can't be Pilate in this situation. Mm-hmm. And too many of us are. Too many of us, we don't want to be confronted with the ugly truth that as a culture, we've accepted the murder of children wholesale. That as taxpayers, we're funding the murder of children wholesale. And again, you can say, well, it doesn't go directly for abortion or whatever. No, it does, because it keeps the lights on and you can't do an abortion in the dark. So you're paying for abortion, right? And it's ugly. It's brutal. It's really happening. And now is the time to say no more. No more. We as a generation can say no more. We can do things about this, and we need to engage. We have to engage.
Well, and there are people doing things about this. You know, if you are not aware of this, there is such a thing as the abortion pill reversal. If you have not heard, it's abortionpillreversal.com. For anyone who's taken RU486, often known as mifepristone, this is a what they call medical abortion, but it is technically a series of pills that you take. If, say, you are, I had a woman contact me through my website. She had taken the first abortion pill and she ends up changing her mind. I used to work for the abortion pill reversal, working on their PR and marketing with Culture of Life Family Services. Awesome work. Pray for Dr. Delgado, because what he's done is he's actually gotten more of this information about the abortion pill reversal into medical journals, which make it more commonplace, more of a common practice. What it does is if you change your mind, Chris, after that first pill, with progesterone and other supporting hormones that help to preserve that pregnancy, they can actually prevent that abortion from taking place. There have been a number of case studies, and we saw that 754 patients in the United States had called the pregnancy hotline for the abortion pill reversal. And out of, let's say, 547 people who actually took it, there were over half that actually then ended up delivering a child successfully. Others didn't maybe stay in contact after the follow-up, maybe change their mind, but they were able to preserve those pregnancies early on.
Okay, let's just clarify for a second, because you tell me abortion reversal, and I go to the suction and forceps and dismemberment of the child abortion, which absolutely happens. What we're talking about is a medically induced abortion, when what they're doing is they're giving women hormones to put them into an early labor, to deliver a child before it can survive outside of the womb, and the child then dies of exposure.
Right.
That's what we're talking about. And so women will go in, they start the procedure, they take one pill.
To start to kill the baby before the pill to deliver the baby.
Right, and then they realize, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And it can be reversed. That child can be saved. And so, you know, that's news that we need to get out there, that it's not 100% guarantee. We're not saying go start your abortion and then if you have second thoughts, turn from it. But if you have ever, or someone you know, finds themselves in a situation like, I did this, I don't want this, I want my baby, then you need to get online and check this out and find out that information, you know, that you can go on. And you can take progesterone, which is a natural hormone that helps women to hold on to their pregnancies, right? With our first child, my wife took progesterone because there was some concern, you know, whatever. But it's a naturally occurring hormone. It women produce it when they're pregnant to help the baby. They give it, and that will then help the woman hold on to that pregnancy and bring it to term.
That is Chris Mueller. We're talking about abortion pill reversal. Mobilize yourselves. Get information into your crisis pregnancy centers, high schools, and colleges so that women who regret starting that abortion process for RU46 can save the life of their child. This is Trending. I'm Tamarie Millington. That is Chris Mueller.